From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
A salmon hatchery operator in Prince William Sound has agreed to pay a $1 million fine for hazardous waste violations. Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation pleaded guilty to illegally burning fuel and waste at its hatcheries, which led to a worker being seriously injured. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning has this report.
Alaska has 25 private nonprofit salmon hatcheries in the state, most of which are in southeast Alaska. Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation operates five of them in remote locations, three of which are state-owned. The hatcheries collect salmon eggs from indigenous DNA lines, fertilize and incubate them indoors, rear them outdoors in pens until they're big enough to be released into nearby waterways. What led the U.S. government charging the regional hatchery operator and the $1 million fine was years of illegally disposing of hazardous waste. The 18-page plea agreement filed November 9th focuses mainly on the Cannery Creek Hatchery, located in a remote inlet approximately 40 miles east of Whittier. Cannery Creek Hatchery violated federal environmental laws on several occasions spanning nearly a decade, according to the plea agreement. In 2013, there was a 400-gallon diesel spill, which resulted in the state suing the corporation and a few hatchery employees. That resulted in a $55,000 fine from state environmental monitors. The operator was also required to hire a consulting firm to create an environmental compliance plan for all five of its hatcheries. The consulting firm noted that the Cannery Creek Hatchery had no formal waste management plan. It was storing new and used oil products in various locations without appropriate containment, and it was burning solid waste in an open pit. 5 years later, in 2018, one of the hatchery's workers was seriously injured while tending to a burning drum with leftover jet fuel in it. He was medevaced out for care. Later, when the Federal Environmental Protection Agency investigated the site, the agency found that the hatchery was still burning drums of fuel. Other hatcheries were mentioned in the plea agreement, which states, the disposal of drums containing used oil was a long-standing issue at the hatcheries. The Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation eventually hired a contractor to remove several tons of hazardous waste from its hatcheries, according to the plea agreement. In addition to the $1 million fine, the corporation has agreed to 5 years of probation, during which time they'll follow an environmental compliance plan. Jeffrey Robinson, an attorney who is representing the hatcheries, said he could not comment on the case until it concludes. A spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney's Office said the sentencing is expected in about 3 months, but declined further comment. The salmon produced in the Prince William Sound hatcheries make up about 45% of the harvest value in the region, or about $50 million a year. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The closure of the Bering Sea snow crab and red king crab fisheries has some coastal Alaskan towns taking a hard look at their futures. As KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports, the remote Pribilof Island city of St. Paul is coming up with some creative ways to soften the looming economic blow.
The economy in St. Paul is built around harvesting and processing snow crab. Now, the island is bracing for a major hit. City manager Philip Zavadil says the effects of the crab closure will be felt far beyond the community of about 350 people.
We're feeding the world with crab and halibut and salmon. That needs to be recognized of how important that is and the contributions that our communities make to that.
St. Paul's Trident Seafoods is one of the largest crab processing plants in the world. And last year saw the largest crash in snow crab that the industry remembers. The disappearance is somewhat of a mystery, but many researchers point to climate change as the likely culprit. And when the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced in October that Bering Sea snow crab would be closed for the first time in the fishery's history, and Red King crab would shut down for a second season in a row, Zavadil knew St. Paul would be in trouble. So he sat down with other city officials, and they hit the drawing board.
So trying to get creative and have people understand that this is going to happen more and more and that we need to address it and do something now instead of waiting. Okay, next year we don't have any funding. We can't provide this service now. What are we going to do?
Rather than just reach out to state and federal officials for help, which they've also done, the city has declared a cultural, economic, and social emergency.
With bringing in typical mitigation functions that you would see to prevent a disaster from happening. We know we're not going to have approximately $2.7 million. How are we going to mitigate that?
The resolution isn't your usual fisheries disaster declaration. It outlines the island's history and its reliance on the snow crab harvest. And Zavadil says it's sort of like a natural disaster declaration. But it's anticipating a coming emergency and the negative impacts that could have on things like critical infrastructure as well as cultural roots.
We're trying to be proactive rather than reactive, knowing that this is going to happen. So what can we do to kind of mitigate those effects before it does happen?
The small island government is expecting a $2 million loss in revenue next year. That's a 90% drop in state shared tax revenue. Community organizations like Central Bering Sea Fishermen's Association and the local Native Corporation are also expecting big hits. Both estimate revenue reductions of over 90% from last year. Elder Jacob Merkuliev is a longtime resident, subsistence fisher, and the mayor of St. Paul. He says when he first heard that both fisheries would close this season, he was stunned.
The first thing that hit my mind, I said, oh no, what are we going to do?
He says he's worried about the ripple effects the shutdowns will have. He expects drops in school funding as families consider leaving the island, a loss of public safety services, reductions in city employee hours, and a rise in various island-wide taxes. Looking forward, he says, the view is pretty grim.
Hopefully, it doesn't carry on for too many years. I think this year we do have some savings set aside that will help a little bit for this year, but if it carries on for 3 or 4 years, we're going to be hurting pretty bad.
Governor Mike Dunleavy requested a disaster declaration for the closure of the two crab fisheries last month. In a letter to the Secretary of Commerce, he said the shutdowns will cause a loss of around $287 million in Alaska's seafood landings. St. Paul City officials also sent a request for a fisheries disaster declaration to Dunleavy, the Secretary of Commerce, and other delegates. Zavadil says the island's cultural, economic, and social emergency declaration is meant to help those representatives see how important this remote community is to other parts of the nation. Ultimately, he hopes it provides an example for other small coastal Alaska communities that are also struggling. He says teaching is integral to the island's identity.
The traditional name that they gave the island, which is Tana'ami, which is land's mother's brother.
The traditional role of the uncle or mother's brother was to provide an example and teach children things like survival skills, he says.
They're still there to kind of provide that guidance to say, hey, you guys can do this too. We can do this together. I just look at St. Paul's history, and there's a number of different situations that we've kind of been that ummi or mother's brother to other Alaskan communities, and setting that example. Here's what you could do to help the survival of your community.
Zavadil says generally it takes about 2 to 5 years for fisheries relief to get to communities. He hopes this effort can help speed that process up. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
According to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the value for all species of salmon commercially harvested in Alaska last year was about $720 million. That's compared to $644 million for last year's catch and $295 million for 2020. The higher value compared to last year was a result of higher prices. When adjusted for inflation, the 2022 ex-vessel value was, as Fish and Game describes it, quote, the 24th lowest ex-vessel value reported since 1975, close quote. So, in other words, about average. The annual catch in terms of number of fish was down 31% from last year. That's because it was an even-numbered year, and pink salmon have had lower runs in even-numbered years for decades. But it was the largest run of pink salmon in an even-numbered year since 2010. The 2022 statewide sockeye salmon harvest of 74.8 million fish is the largest on record, mainly due to some serious conking in Bristol Bay. Two-thirds of the value of Alaska's salmon harvest, or $474 million, was from the sale of sockeye salmon, mostly because of the record 70 million fish caught in Bristol Bay last year. Because it was an even-numbered pink year, more sockeye salmon were caught than any other species, making up 47% of the total harvest, or about 75 million fish. Pink salmon were 43% of the total fish taken, with about 69 million fish, for which fishermen were paid $102 million, or 14% of the total value. So 90% of the salmon caught last year were either reds or pinks, and they combined for 80% of the total value. Chum salmon accounted for just 7% of the harvest, with about 15 million fish harvested, but topped pinks for value with over $110 million in sales for 15% of the total value. 1.6 million cohos were captured last year, for which fishermen were paid $15 million. That was 1% of the harvest for 2% of the value. Chinook salmon harvest is estimated to be just under 310,000 fish, with an estimated preliminary ex-vessel value of $18.8 million. That's over $60 per fish. A total of 6,126 individual permit holders made commercial salmon landings in 2022.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.